how do you introduce Sandy and Ranguna? I guess you can introduce them as Mom 1, or Mom 2, and Dad 2, because they're, I think I met them last fall, in just an evening of when they had a gathering in their home, and I just remember feeling the warmth of this home and the warmth that came from them and all the people there, actually. And it was interesting how people who had never really met before suddenly felt like family. And I think I remember thinking, it feels like almost anyone who just walks through the door, just it becomes family. And then I learned that, well, actually a lot of people that do just walk in the door become family if they want to. And so basically for like over three decades, Sandy and Ranganath have been hosting students and people in their home. And it started out as being on this kind of college list at a local university to be a host for people who, students who were far from home or overseas, who didn't have family that they could go home to on the holidays. So, you know, usually, like, they'll have a list and they'll pair people up and you can go there for Thanksgiving dinner and have a nice meal and then go home, you know, and feel a little of that family warmth. But being the NIACs, they couldn't just leave it at Thanksgiving dinner. And so people just kind of stuck on and brought their friends, and soon they didn't need to be on some formal list because people just became, you know, people are people. So we just, people were just introduced through, and then they just had all these informal hosties, and then people would come, stay in school for a while, maybe work in the area, and then go move away, have kids, and when their kids grew up, and if they went to school in the Boston area, they'd be like, oh, well, you have to look up Mom 2 and Dad 2, and you know, it's like going to visit your grandparents that you've never met before, but when you meet them, they're like your grandparents or your parents, so then basically the NIACs have hosted, you know, second generations and just waves of people in their home. But there's in just opening up their homes, it's also getting to know them as people. There's an openness about them that kind of allows them to create beauty and innovation and just love wherever they are. And they're so humble about it. So, you know, you only hear these things in passing or in the form of jokes or, you know, through the love of cookies or, like, delicious food that Ranganath and Sandy make. But you'll hear things like, you know, Ranganath has authored 3 books, or Sandy, when she graduated from college from Radcliffe's anthropology department, she went on a Fulbright to India for a year, and instead of taking first-class train tickets to travel the country, she opted for third-class tickets, and just like all these little tidbits of like jewels of just like seeing the world, I feel like they both have an eye for small things that make all the difference. And I don't know if Nosheen, if you have anything to add to that, our co-moderator here.
So I'm just sitting here. I walked into the door, and I was like, oh, this feels like home. So just being back in the living room is just so amazing. I guess I just wanted to ask because I don't think I've ever asked you guys before, but, you know, what inspired you to start doing this? Where did it start? How did it start?
You know, actually, I feel more proud of my cooking than of my generosity. And it feels a little strange, actually, to be praised for the things that just come naturally and that we do just because we enjoy doing it. And doesn't feel like noble or great or any of those things. It's a way of life that's fun. And at least for me, it originated in my childhood when my parents had big houses in Bombay and Delhi, and they always filled them up with guests. The guests in those days were mostly relatives who had come to Bombay to go to school or college or take examinations or see a doctor or whatever. And so in my early years, I was surrounded by friends and family. And so when I came to this country, I kind of had a desire to have a life like that, and it's not easy because my parents had lots of servants to help. And so over the course of time, we invented a way of doing it here to be surrounded by friends and family, simply because it feels good by having all our guests do the work. Right? So that's the fundamental model we have. Everyone's welcome here. First, as long as they behave well. But second, they have to pitch in and help. And they help. They help with vacuuming or doing the laundry or washing the dishes, any of those things. So that's sort of how it happened. And the crucial part of making it happen has been Sandy's kind of hard work in making it happen. I do the cooking, and then she does everything else. Are we still on?
Yeah, we're still on. I just turned off the recording. Sandy, do you have anything to add to that? Or
no, it's pretty accurate.
But the other thing I should add is I had the childhood tradition of lots of friends and family in the house. In fact, all the years I was growing up, I didn't even have a bedroom because all the bedrooms were given over to guests. And so I slept in the corridor on a mat with one of those old, they're called charpais in India, where it's a wooden frame with a cloth strap wrapped around it. And it's very easy to dismantle and take from one place to another. And my brother and I, and later my sister, all slept on those in a long corridor. So, but Sandy did have the tradition growing up of inviting hosties, as we now call them, into the family. You want to say something about that, Sandy?
Well, my father was a university professor, and so if there were foreign students who were lost, which was frequent, he brought them home. And so we learned, and it was a lot of fun. We met a lot of interesting people that way. He was a computer science professor. When I was young, he was at the University of Pennsylvania, and then we moved on to and other places. And we always had people come like that, through the university mostly. So it seemed natural to host when we got bigger.
Yeah, and then in that line, so how did this begin? I know you like got on a list, but like, can you tell us a bit about the early days of hosting people and what that was like?
Any interesting stories would be great as well.
I think the very first one, well, Sandy decided we ought to be on the host family program at some university because her parents had done that a long time ago in a more informal way. And I think we approached Harvard University because we knew somebody there.
Yeah, and I was an alum.
And we kind of thought about it and decided that on the whole we would prefer hosties, as we call them, from South Asia because they would enjoy our food. And so the very first one we had was a young guy called Arvind Athreya, who came from a village northeast of Delhi. And he came to Harvard to PhD. And he was very affectionate, and he didn't actually live with us. He lived in his dorm at Harvard. But he came over frequently, at least once a week, maybe more, to have dinner. And, you know, having come, maybe spend the night, etc. And then he graduated with a PhD from Harvard in fire technology. That's what he was studying, was how fires propagate. And when he left a whole pile of half-burned hardwood in our basement, which we then proceeded to use in our fireplace over the next several years. And he got married, and he had a kid. He was an assistant professor by that time at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And when his son was born, he called up my son, Anand, and who was at that time 5 years old?
More like seven.
Seven. And he asked Anand's permission to name his son Anand.
Wow.
Our son Anand was so thrilled that somebody was asking permission to name his kid after him.
Wow.
And then 20 years after that, the new Anand had graduated from Stanford and come to the Boston area, and his younger sister was a freshman at Harvard, and they both used to hang out at our house.
Nice.
And they're now both moved to California. So, but, you know, the root of it was, I don't know whether this sounds good or not, but it was not a desire to do things for other people so much as to have fun, you know, to make a life nice for others and at the same time enjoy ourselves doing it. So it didn't feel like we were being generous, as it were. Mm-hmm. It was like being natural.
Mm-hmm. And what was the fun? Like, what made it fun?
What made it fun is I enjoy people. I enjoy talking to people, exchanging ideas, hanging out. I don't know what made it fun for you.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much the same. And not everybody liked it. Some people went away. Mm-hmm. Most people stayed.
So, you know, yes, the story about when you were growing up, you know, having to sleep in the corridor in the charpai. I'm told that when you guys first hosted someone here, your daughter was still an infant, and they had to share the room, the same room. Tell us about that.
Even further back in time.
That was before we were hosting formally, and not really share a room with the baby, but we had the baby things in the other bedroom, and the baby slept in a basket in our bedroom. And Nita put up with all the baby stuff in her bedroom, and she stayed with us for several months.
Uh-huh.
And that's just because in a Cambridge apartment, you only have so much space. And so, yeah, it was the baby's room. Where else to put somebody who's going to stay for several months? It works. She's still a good friend.
Yeah, and she was here from Delhi because the guy she really had set her eyes on had come to graduate school over here from India, and she stayed with us while she pursued him.
Not quite.
And then they got married, and they live in Delhi, and then their kids came to Brandeis, and we became their host family. That was... The Nira was around 1969, 1970, and then her kids came to Brandeis like 20 to 25
years. One kid came to Brandeis
later.
And one came to Williams, but they
Williams.
Were both around.
Yeah, and if we live another 20 years, maybe their kids will come.
Have you ever had that? Have you ever had, like,
grandchildren?
Not yet.
Not that.
We are just getting to the point where we have our own grandchildren. I want to do some sharing about children and grandchildren.
Yeah, go for it.
Thought I should let others talk during the circle of sharing, but 2 days ago, my daughter Maya's husband, George, sent me a photograph of their daughter Asha, who's just about to turn 1 year old, and she's beaming, and her whole face is covered with green kale juice. And it's called the Green Kale Juice Monster. Tell you, it was just wonderful to see that photograph and think of what a joy it is to be a mess. And then yesterday we went to Club Passim in Harvard Square and listened to my son and his group, which is called Mayhem, perform folk music. And it was just spectacular. It was houseful. The whole audience was enthusiastic, and it felt like an incredible high. They're a very energetic group, and they do gorgeous music. And, of course, all of them are spending the night here tonight.
Oh, wow.
And last night and tonight.
Oh, that's why there's so many instruments.
Yeah.
There's, like, this huge bass in one room.
When the band comes, they sing with us.
Nice. So what have been some memorable moments that you might have had with all the people over the years? Do any incidents, any of those messes or any of those?
Well, let me tell you about memorable moments.
Uh-huh.
long ago, someone asked my son when he was about 10 years old, what was the most memorable day of your life? And he said, it was yesterday because I haven't had the time to forget.
That's perfect.
Oh, the most memorable thing that comes to mind is what happened last fall when Pavi and Suchi came here for their book promotion. And, you know, long ago, Suchi gave me a copy of the video that Pavi had made, Infinite Vision, and it's become a staple of our house. We show it to everyone who comes here, and when Anand's band returns this evening, we're going to show it to them. And so it's a story that I'm, you know, I really love it. It shows something. And so that gathering in the fall in November was a real high point, going to some of the talks that Suchi and Pavi gave and seeing the kind of reactions they got, and then having a large group gathered together over here. I think there must have been 13 or 14 people, right, sitting and talking about the book and so on and so forth. That felt very good. So there's a lot of reward from doing this, but it's not why we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Sandy? Do you have any moments that, like, stand out in your mind?
I think it's the same. It's hard to remember. It's like when you have kids and grandkids, there's lots of little moments here and there, but you're faced with the question of memorable moments.
Mm-hmm.
What to say?
Yesterday.
We've had a number of memorable moments in many ways. There was one friend of a friend who arrived from Switzerland, and he arrived in our kitchen just as a kitchen pot exploded. And so that was his introduction to our house, because I had put a lid on something, and it somehow blew, stuck, and it developed steam under it. And as he entered the house, the lid blew, and then he spent the next half hour helping us to clean up the kitchen, because whatever was inside went all over the kitchen. That was very memorable, and I bet you he's never forgotten it. And this is America.
Scrub the ceiling.
He scrubbed the ceiling?
We had to scrub. The ceiling had to be scrubbed.
Uh-huh.
So speaking of the memorable moments where, you know, the everything's flying out of the pot and having to clean it up. So in terms of, tell us, as you create this space of warmth and unconditional acceptance into your home, what are some of the challenges as you know, in terms of either, I don't know, boundaries or, you know, I know you mentioned, you know, people chip in, but talk to us about some of those difficult moments or, you know, how you might have handled that.
Well, the acceptance isn't unconditional, because freeloading isn't good for anybody.
Right.
And so we need to enjoy it. They need to. People here need to enjoy it, and if somebody's doing something that disrupts that for anybody, then it needs to be dealt with, and sometimes that's uncomfortable to tell people that they are treading on other people's space.
Mm-hmm.
And most people see that and don't do it, so it's not a problem. But occasionally, over the years, people have had to be reminded that they are treading in someone else's space, maybe not our space, but somebody else's space, and they have to shape up or ship out. So they either shape up or ship out one way or another.
And also not everyone is automatically conscious of the need to pitch in and help.
So
they sometimes have to be told and taught. And that's uncomfortable to begin with until they get accustomed to it. And in recent years, our daughter Lakshmi has taken on that role of the sergeant major. So when there are people who are going to come and stay here for a bit of time, she takes them aside and reads them the rules about here is what you need to do if you want to stay over here.
She says I'm not strict enough.
And she's very good at it, because she's not doing it on her behalf, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to say something on your own behalf, but on somebody else's behalf, it's very easy to be tough, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and then also, that makes me think about how...
I have to say that there are a couple of people who misbehaved often enough that we told them not to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that is part of building a community, mm-hmm. is to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not all sweetness and light,
right?
I have all these questions, but, you know, I guess in terms of you know, each hostie brings their own culture and in terms of celebrating holidays and things like that. So you know, but as they come to your home, they're sort of, you know, their own unique family of you know, hosties and you guys as hosts that emerges. But, you know, talk to us about some of the cultures that, you know, or family traditions or, you know, things that have been celebrated at the NAIACS, for instance.
Well, most people who come here, we cook largely Indian food, so that's sort of a given. But so most people have been from South Asia, one way or another, because of that. But we've had several Chinese host students and have learned a lot about China, mm-hmm. in the course of that. That's been very interesting. And a few European friends who are... the children of colleagues at work or whatever, and everybody just fits in. And I don't know, we don't go out of our way to celebrate anything in particular, but I don't know what to say. Really.
But we've traded kids.
Yeah.
So we have these friends from Germany who happen to have 11 children, and at least 3 of their children have come and stayed with us. And all 3 of our children, in return, have gone and stayed with them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been sort of an exchange like that. And then there was
Lakshmi stayed in Hong Kong.
2 who came from Hong Kong. And then Lakshmi went and stayed with their parents in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been kind of this enriching of ties and connections. We've had people from Pakistan, from Bangladesh, many from Sri Lanka, a lot from India,
uh-huh.
and then through the informal network, quite a few from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of the things I've learned from it is how to do cooking from all over the world. Fortunately, there isn't anyone here who knows enough to tell me whether it's good or not.
It's good. So what is, like, based on, like, seeing so many different types of people and so many different cultures and having traveled quite extensively yourself, I'd love to hear, you know, maybe some stories from traveling and meeting different people. And also, like, what is something that keeps coming up, or what are some kind of universal rhythms or ties that you might have noticed?
Audrey, you ask very complicated
questions. Sorry, is that really complex? Okay.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. I long ago became interested in the question, which was asked specifically by a British philosopher called Arthur Kessler, which is, why is mankind so violent? And why do we always kind of divide the world into us and them, and we like us and we don't like them, and so on and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
And what that led me to his book, he wrote a book called The Ghost and the Machine,
mm-hmm.
which is really worth reading. And he said, essentially, there's a primitive brain that divides the world into us and them, so you can be safe. And it's the flight and fight response.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the more civilized brain that somehow manages to control the primitive brain. And the only way it manages is through travel, through meeting people, through reading, through education, to recognizing more and more people as us. And I think that's sort of a fundamental drive that I've had, and I think Sandy has had. And so throughout our travels, we have tried to broaden the definition of who is us. And now I can't think of anyone I would meet who is not part of us, of whom I would sort of instinctively have a negative reaction. It just doesn't happen. And so I think that's sort of an important dimension to this whole sharing business, is to propagate the idea that we're all one, And so starting out with instinctive dislike or instinctive distrust is kind of the root of so much violence in the world. And I think, the negative side of that is everywhere I go, people feel the same. I mean, their habits are different, their cultures are different, the food is different, but their basic drives are the same, mm-hmm. right? And so they're not different. They're in superficial ways, they're different, but when you really get down to the roots of what do they like, what do they not like, they like their children, they like this, they like that, they're the same. And I think, to me, that's been reinforced again and again. I don't know what you feel.
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there that aren't like that, but we tend to not meet them.
Or maybe you don't see, yeah, go ahead. I was just thinking, it reminds me of how when you meet people, like seeing people as reflections of yourself, so kind of when you meet people, if you're in a certain mindset, you bring out that same type of mindset in others, or you see that mindset in others, and that's where the connection, the space opens up.
But I also think it's very important for children to learn very, very early in life that people who look different aren't necessarily very different, and that you can have your friends from anywhere. And I think even though I was raised in a small town in Pennsylvania that was pretty far from, well, it was a small town in Pennsylvania, but one of the families in town and the family of my mother's best friend from school was Japanese. And so from my earliest childhood, I knew that my mother's very best friend was Japanese. And I would go, it was a big honor to be taken to visit her mother, who was a very proper, older Japanese lady, living in a little town in Pennsylvania, but maintaining a beautifully calm, serene Japanese house. Mm-hmm. Not architecturally, but spiritually. And that was very good for me growing up, because even from day one, well, my mother was the kind of person who didn't think it at all unusual to have the matron of honor at her wedding be this Japanese friend, which in 1943 created some publicity. Wow. And that didn't bother her.
So here's another thing that was a revelation to me. Mm-hmm. When Sandy and I got engaged, my parents were not the most delighted people in the world. And it was my grandmother who accepted Sandy with open arms, saying, well, if Ranganath likes her, she must be okay. But years later, when we were married and my parents came to visit, and Sandy's parents came to visit from Pennsylvania. So here are, well-educated, relatively liberal Hindus from India and relatively liberal Quakers from Pennsylvania. And they were so similar in their values and beliefs and everything else. Mm-hmm. It was astonishing, mm-hmm. And I'd never kind of expected that it would be like that. So that was another verification of this idea that we're not that different from each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, Sandy's dad and my dad agreed more with each other than they did with me.
I am curious, though, in terms of, when you say, absolutely, I think that message of we're not really that different from each other. But I am intrigued, Sandy, I think in the callers, for our callers as well, but traveling to, your travel to India where you traded in your ticket to get third-class train tickets and toured the country.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why, and tell us what you saw on that journey, because there is a difference of, that we're all the same, but still that, it was probably a bit, I don't know, felt a little unsafe, dangerous, like it must have been an adventure. Like, tell us about that.
And also, before you answer, Sandy, I'm wondering if we want to maybe start getting folks to line up on the queue if they mm-hmm. have Q&A. So if people have questions, can they press *6 or?
Yeah, I will. I will turn on. So that way, if people do have questions, they can push *6. But I would love to hear the answer to this question. Great question there, Nasheen.
Well, I'm not sure of what to answer, except that I was staying with another American girl named Lucinda. We were at Allahabad. We were supposed to be teaching English at Allahabad University. but Allahabad University went on strike against English. So we had some time. So the two of us decided to do the Buddhist pilgrimage all in Bihar, to go to Bodh Gaya and all of that. So we did that, and the way to get around was really third-class train because it was great fun. And then there was another strike, and we went to Orissa, and we went all around Puri and Bhubaneswar and Konark and all of that. And then I made some trips on my own and because she was busy, and then we went to Khajuraho and all through Madhya Pradesh and everything together. We were usually together, two girls traveling. And we could just get a lot farther if we went third class. It was a third of the price. And a lot more fun because people were friendly. And in first class, people tended to be themselves reserved. Mm-hmm. And third class, everybody thought we were a traveling circus act. I mean, two American girls wearing saris, speaking bad Hindi, and having a blast. So it was very, very friendly, and everybody traded, shared their vegetables, and we bought tea and bananas, and we had a great time. We went all over India like that because Allahabad University went on strike so often and finally canceled the year. So we had a great time, and it was wonderful. So that's
Sandy, what this is Amit. I guess, you know, how did you get from small town Quaker community Pennsylvania to India? I mean, that's just that's a huge leap.
Not really, because Quakers are very
cosmopolitan.
And in Sunday school, which the Quakers call first day school, we learned as much about Buddhist thought as anything else, really. So then I went to high school in Arizona, and it was a very international high school, so I met lots of people. And then I went to college in Cambridge, and then I met Ranganath. And then I decided to go to India before I agreed to marry him so I could check it out. And I
think it was actually part of her destiny to go to India, because when we met, it was at an Israeli folk dance. I'd never done Israeli folk dancing in my life. And I had asked my host family in those days. I was 21 years old. I was a graduate student at MIT. It was 1963. I had just arrived. And I went to my host family and said, I've never met any women in my life other than my cousins. Where can I meet them? And they say, go dancing. So I went to a dance, and it was a Western-style dance, and it wasn't any fun. So I went back and said, not like that. I want something else. And they said, try folk dancing. So I went to the first folk dance I could find. It was an Israeli folk dance. And I opened the doors, and I was stunned to see what was going on. People were jumping up and down, running in circles and hollering. And I said, this is folk dancing. And this young woman came and grabbed my hand and said, come on, I'll show you how to dance. And that was Sandy. So that's how we met. And that's how she ended up in India. So, Amit, does that answer your question?
Oh, that's perfect.
So she did it by intention. She said, there's my ticket to India, and came and showed me how to do folk dancing.
That's great. We actually have a question from one of the callers that's on the phone. And again, for those of you that are also on the phone, if you have a question for Sandy and Ranganath, please push *6, and then you will join the queue. So I believe Prakash has a question.
Thank you, Amit. We are totally loving this conversation. Audrey and the co-moderator, Sandy, Ranganathan, sir. Well, let's see. I must also say that the conversation is so funny too. We're giggling all the time. It's beautiful. I have a quick reflection and a quick question. Reflection was this idea of, the growing up in India and, sleeping on the floor, and that brought up a lot of beautiful memories growing up with almost like two cricket team of cousins. There used to be a joke, we ever two cricket teams, and we're in the process of forming a third one, rebel team. Thank you for bringing up that memory in me. Now the question is, playing along with the theme of you know, staying just enough up to yesterday. I won't go beyond that. The question is for both of you, Sandy and Ranganathan, sir. What did you do yesterday? Sort of like an insight, a zoom in on your day yesterday from morning till evening. Just want to, you know, listen in. I'm sure there will be beautiful, many more moments to, you know, giggle. Before I turn it over to you, I also wanted to, I believe today is Suchi's due date, and I wanted to send our love and wishes for that beautiful moment also. And if you have anything...
The daughter arrived 2 days ago.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And I want to hear you express any, you know, word of wisdom for in celebration of that beautiful moment. And lastly, I know that we have not met you and haven't been in your, you know, beautiful space, but we want you to know that, you know, we seem to have found the partners in having fun. Thank you.
So the word of wisdom I have for Suchitra's baby is please turn out like your mom. Her mom is one of my favorite people of all the thousands of hosties we've had over the years. So what happened yesterday, Sandy? I think guests started arriving.
The band came.
The band is a group called Daisy Mayhem, which is what my son makes music with. And they're really quite well known around the country now. They perform everywhere. And they came in 3 cars. Rani Arbo is the leader, and she has an Indian name, although she's completely American, and her mother came, and her son, and her husband, and 2 other bandmates, and so most of the day was spent bringing them into the house and helping them set up and giving them meals, and then in the evening going and listening to them perform. And along the way, I asked Rani's mother, who is about my Sandy's and my age, why she named her daughter Rani. Because what Rani had told us was my parents were hippies, and so they named me after an Indian name. And I said, is that true? And she said, no, absolutely not. That's not why I named her Rani. I had a good friend who was Rani Mansukhani, and I liked her, so I named my daughter after her. Mm-hmm. So... that's how we spent the day yesterday, and we ended it by going and listening to my son's group perform in Harvard Square, and it was wonderful.
Our next caller.
Hi, this is Lavanya calling from Pittsburgh. This is a wonderful and really fun call. I feel really lighthearted listening to you all. I was in Boston until 1.5 years ago, also a grad student at MIT. And I'm just wondering how I never came across you. It's so
you didn't know to
I had a question too for you. And this is about what do you feel when people leave and how is your reaction? I mean, I know people talk a lot about, you know, attachment and this, that. You know, there's a lot of, I guess, theoretical stuff. But when... really, you form these nice and close, loving relationships with people. I guess there is that, it tugs at your heart. And I'm kind of, I've become close with another host family here as well. And that's really something that I keep thinking about sometimes. So I'd appreciate anything you can say about it.
Well, Suti was here, and now she's in India, and she has a baby, and that's fine, and we went to visit her when we went to India last. I mean, kids grow up and they leave. That's the normal course of life, and then you keep on visiting. Hopefully they'll come back, and you'll get to see the kiddies, and that's what we've all, I mean, that's what life is. You don't want them to not grow up.
So. But also, separation is very different now than it was, say, 40 years ago. Travel is so much easier. You can Skype, you can do email, you can telephone, you can be in touch a lot more easily than you could in the old days. And almost everyone who has been here and become part of the family and then gone away has stayed in touch and come back, or we've gone and seen them. I mean, 8 or 9 years ago, Sandy and I made a car trip across the United States. It took 9 weeks. And what we did was to see who are all the people who have been in our house, and we put them on a map, and then we plotted out a route to go and see all of them. We saw everyone, excepting one in Texas and one in Florida because they were too far out of the way. But we went to California and drove all the way from San Diego up the coast to Seattle and saw everyone who had ever been in our house.
Wow.
We had knew where they were.
And was that just inspired, just like, hey, let's just see where everyone is? Or
I also wanted to see the country.
Oh.
And the country is beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I kept a diary, and we were on the road for 63 nights. And 49 nights we stayed with friends and family.
Wow.
14 we stayed in motels, and that was mainly between Idaho and Chicago, where we didn't know anybody, like in Yellowstone Park and so on.
Did you meet any people?
Oh, yeah, we met
a lot of people.
What do you mean? We met 168 people that we knew, and then we met hundreds of people that we didn't know.
That's great. All right. Well, so, again, this is just a reminder for those of you that are on the call, *6, if you have a question for Sandy and Ranganath. We're going to our next caller.
Hi, this is Vinaya with a question. I was listening to thank you so much. You're sharing such beautiful thoughts. I was, thinking about how you met Sandy, Ranganath, how you met her at the dance, and I'm wondering, how did it progress into such a beautiful relationship where you guys have shared such a nice life together and you're giving so much of yourself to the world? How were you able to accept each other, and how was that initial part? I hope it's not too private, but if there's anything you can share about that, that'll be great.
Simply known as love. And it strikes you out of the blue, and then you can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
If you meet Sandy, you'll understand why.
Very sweet. You know, I wanted to throw in a question now that they're on this topic of love as well, because, you know, you have two wonderful children, and I'd be curious kind of how they felt.
Amit, we have three.
Sorry, three.
The third one
I should probably say hundreds, but, you know how they felt when you had all of these individuals coming in and out of the house. You know, was it like, oh, great, you know, we're having more friends than ever? Did they ever feel, how did you make them feel not left out, or that you weren't giving them the attention that they needed, or were they just kind of went with the flow? It was just part of family life at the NIAC.
Well, sometimes they did feel left out. And sometimes it was an issue, especially when they were in their teens. And there were occasions when they said, all right, let's have a family night when it's just the five of us. So that did happen occasionally, and we did work on it. It was an issue. I thought it would be more fun for them than sometimes it was, because sometimes they did feel crowded, and sometimes they told us about it. So, yeah, it's an issue. Like if there's 17 stockings at Christmas, the kids might feel left out. Not left out, but
overwhelmed.
Yeah,
but there were, you know, on the positive side, there were times when it felt to them like it felt to me when I was growing up, which is all these uncles and aunts in the house were wonderful because I could get to play cricket with them, and they would tell me stories at night or take me out for ice cream or whatever. And so I think to a certain extent, these hosties of ours were like uncles and aunts to our kids. And sometimes uncles and aunts are wonderful, and sometimes they're a pain in the neck. And so it was the same with our hosties. So, but I think that's just life. You know, you don't sort of hang out with somebody and everything feels wonderful all the time. There are times when it's not so great, and you just learn to live with it.
That's great. I'm going to pass things on to our next caller.
Hi, this is Michelle from Santa Fe. I feel like I have met old friends. I've grown up with parents that took us all over the world, and our house was always open, and we've stayed with many people, and it's wonderful to meet other families like that. I'm also in the process of building educational materials and curriculum about being global citizens and what does it take to be a responsible global citizen. And I'm wondering if either of you or both of you would consider that question and say what your wisdom is about that. Let me rephrase it. What is the most important thing for that every human being might want to learn to be a responsible global citizen?
First of all, let me say how jealous I feel that the sun is shining in Santa Fe. It's miserable here in Boston, and it's like snow. Sandy, you want to answer her question?
Well, I did spend 2 years at a high school that was founded by a character who asked that question specifically and spent most of his life founding and running a school that tried to meet that. He was appalled at the disrespect that American officers in the military showed to people around him, and decided to found a school to teach young Americans to behave properly. So he thought it through. That school is called Verde Valley. It's in Sedona, Arizona. And I'm sure if you talk to people at Verde Valley, they could give you an earful, because they're still running on the same. That's one of the, I lived 2 years in Arizona and 1 year in New Mexico before that. But it's what they said, what he said, was you have to respect everybody as people, and you can't treat anybody as second class. And you have to learn that. Deliberately learn that when you're a kid, that you can't just equate whole sections of the world as second class because they're not American or they're not this or they're not that or whatever. It's the same as the us and them thing. You have to accept people as us. And some schools try to teach it deliberately, which is good. And then the rest of us have to teach it outside the schools because some schools don't.
I think the best thing in the world teach people that is travel.
Yeah.
And just meeting people from all over the world under good circumstances and discovering, as I said, that at the core we're the same.
Mm-hmm.
And travel helps an immense amount, and the more you can sort of make it happen, the more easier it becomes to teach people about being.
But that's only travel that meets people.
Yeah.
Not travel
to five-star hotels.
Yeah, and not travel that's encapsulated, like you're going around the world, but you're always eating American food and you're always traveling with Americans. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work.
Go third-class train.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And feel free to come and visit us in Santa Fe anytime you need the sun.
Thank you.
I love Santa Fe.
I'm going to move on to our next caller.
Hello, this is Trevor from Detroit. I don't have a particular question, but just after this wonderful phone call, I feel like jumping in a car and driving to Boston and just sharing an experience. So I just wanted to share that. You sound like wonderful people.
Thank you. I used to travel to Detroit every week for several years in the 1980s.
Really?
Yeah. Used to do consulting
for Ford Motor Company.
I was
wonderful.
A consultant to Ford Motor Company, so I used to go to Dearborn.
Ah, great, great. Well, hopefully we can meet sometime. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Great. And again, for those of you that are on the call, *6, if you have a question.
We actually have a question over here.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
So my name is Robin, and I'm, I guess, from Ohio, but talking from Boston. And I'm actually, for those listening, have the pleasure of being in the living room now with these two wonderful people. And I'm looking around the living room and thinking about, like, the nature of a home and how homes tend to acquire a sense of the people who live in them. And, of course, so many people have been in this home around these two main dwellers. But so I'm just wondering mainly so my first question was, like, how much of this home is comprised of things that have come from the other people from the outside, and how much of it has come from your travels? But then my attention was drawn to this thing on the table, which is a plastic orb with a wizard on the inside, and I'm just really struck by this one figure among all of these things that are so global, and there are plants and a cat and this beautiful rug and then this plastic wizard, and I just am wondering, and I'm just delighted by it, and I'm just wondering the story behind that wizard.
So the story behind that is we had that young woman from Hong Kong who came to Harvard and as an undergraduate, and we were her host family.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Lynn Shaw. She now lives near San Diego. And one day she brought a cousin of hers who was at a college in the Boston area. And the cousin felt she had to bring a gift. And she brought the wizard. And the wizard has answered questions for 20 years now.
Wow.
Including, should I marry that guy? And the wizard is very wise. You want to ask him a question?
I would have asked him that question that I just asked. Where do you come from?
Well, he doesn't answer those kinds of questions. He only answers yes or no questions.
Right. I'll see if I can come up with one worthy of the wizard.
Is there going to be a good dinner tonight? He'll answer that.
He better say yes.
We'll talk later, wizard.
So the stuff in this house has come from lots of people. And everyone who comes here brings something, leaves it, and somebody or the other, usually not Sandy or me, decides whether it's going to stay or not. because at some point the house gets overcrowded.
And then I give things away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the phrase that a very good friend of ours used after coming and spending Thanksgiving here. She said, "I love the creative clutter of your house."
Mm-hmm.
Because it tells you about a house that's lived in rather than formal and beautifully organized and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sort of what this feels like. Yeah. I mean, you could look around and say, my God, what a mess.
You must have a very strong sense of the importance of letting things pass you by. You said, you know, giving things away in your house and then also saying goodbye to people. I think that's a really incredible ability that both of you must have had.
I think we don't say goodbye because there's almost nobody we see that we don't see again. You know, they're there, and it's so much easier to stay in touch now.
Yeah.
I don't do Facebook, but I'm in touch. I'm in touch.
Oh, that's wonderful. Actually, yeah, you know, Sandy, I also had a question. You know, just listening to this, you know, it reminds me, you know, it reminds me in the sense of my parents and just, you know, this generation that, you know, was always just so open and welcoming, you know, and, you know, at times, you know, I feel like, at least in my generation, we'd almost kind of approach something like this with a little bit of fear and trepidation, but hearing all these wonderful stories of people that have come in and out of your life, you know, I guess if you had to give us or give me advice, you know, when I have my home and I want to have people coming through, what are some of the practices, best practices, let's call it, or the systems in place that we should have so that can create this environment? I mean, it would be nice to have a sergeant major like Lakshmi around to keep people in line to help out with the chores. But, you know, to really, because it's more than just saying, hey, come to my house for dinner. I mean, you guys seem to really cultivate something special where you, like I said, you know, people feel not just come to dinner, but then they bring their friend along or their cousin along or, you know, so-and-so along. And these are connections that have sort of maintained. And so any words of wisdom sort of in that direction of how to sort of create that type of environment in our own homes? in our own hearts?
Well, it helps to have an elastic food budget. I mean, we've always been fortunate that we don't have to count the beans. And also to have fairly simple, I mean, we serve mostly vegetarian food, so it's really not that expensive to, and it's always stretchable. I mean, a pot of soup or a pot of rice can always be expanded, so we never have the sort of food that you have to count something. And that helps. So you can't be really uptight about the food budget. And so you just keep it simple and keep it open, and somehow it works. It also helps that I didn't have to work full time, so I had the time to pick up the pieces and keep things going. I think it would be very difficult to do if there were two people working full time and also raising children. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have some slack. There has to be somebody to pick up the pieces. There has to be no major illnesses or other things that really absorb attention. Then you can do it. It's easy enough.
And then you have to have learned how to cook.
Yeah, that helps.
Now, I mean, really, to not be intimidated by it, to be able to do it quickly, not spend an awful lot of time on it, etc. Otherwise, if it becomes a chore and a burden, then your natural tendency is to want to go out to eat. And if you go out to eat, it's very hard to build the kind of thing that we're talking about here. And I didn't learn how to cook until I was 35, but that's when I started. I mean, I learned how to cook when I was a graduate student, but it was the kind of cooking that my mother tried once and then she couldn't eat it. And we had the habit in those days, Amit, of extending the meal when suddenly extra guests showed up. We'd put more powder into everything so that they couldn't eat it. So the food would go a lot further. But it really does help to build some of the basic skills of looking after a house, doing the laundry, doing the dishes, so that it doesn't feel like a terrible chore all the time. And as soon as those things become easier to do, then the whole thing becomes easier to do. So there's some degree of practice involved.
And you don't lose your cool if Suchi says, I'm bringing four people, and they turn into 10.
Or Audrey says, I'm bringing four friends.
Fine.
That's wonderful. That's great. Audrey and Oisin, did you guys have any other questions there on your side?
I think you can go ahead with the cue. Yeah, we're okay over here.
But we're actually all set. Unless there's anyone else that's there on the queue or wants to has a question for Sandy and Ranganath, star 6. This is sort of last call.
So I want to tell you what's for dinner tonight. Amit, you want to come for dinner?
I would love to come for dinner. I would actually learn to cook from you with that speed and that love that you put into your food, because I've had your cooking and it's very good.
So we're having pasta with homemade pesto.
Oh, wow.
And we're having roasted Brussels sprouts and cauliflower with Italian seasoning.
Wow.
And a big salad. Anyone interested?
Yeah.
I think so, because I just saw two people pop up on the queue to ask you a question. I'm going to move it on to our next question.
Hi, this is Pavi again, and I didn't have a question so much as just a reflection or a memory I wanted to share from the time that we were all together in Boston at the Nayak's home. And it was right after an event that we'd done at Harvard for the book, and I feel like we invited half the audience home for dinner with us. And it was so beautiful because many of the people coming over had never met the Nayaks before, and they had, I don't know how long it took them to prepare the meal or anything, but it just, you know, we get there, and I remember that, you know, a lot of times when people host, it's about them being in the spotlight and kind of being the center of attraction. And with the Nayaks, there's just, you know, they're happy to engage, but they're also so beautifully happy in the background as well. And there was this one moment I remember, you know, I was standing at the entry to the kitchen where all the food was, and people were swarming all over with their plates and their conversations, and Ranganath was just beaming. I mean, he was like this, you know, sunburst on his face, and I was just standing next to him, and he looks over and he says, "Pavi, this is wonderful. You know, this is. I just love it when the house is filled like this." And I just remember feeling, you know, of course, you hear something like that, and your heart it just fills and swells. But it also just feeling so humbled, you know, by that the beauty of that spirit that is open enough to receive so immediately in that act of giving, so that it just blurs it completely, you know, the giving and the receiving. So thank you both, Sandy and Ranganath, for that.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We have one more question, and then we'll wrap up the call. Thank you, Bobby.
Hi, this is Vinya again. I just wanted to say I keep coming to Boston, and I so wish I had known about you. I would have loved to come and see you, and I hope I can come and see you when I come to Boston again. And I wanted to say, I heard you say, you know, it's so important to know cooking and things that you can do pretty quick, because that's something I really stress with. I have two people coming home today, and I still haven't figured out what I'm going to cook. So it would be great if, at some point, if you have the time, if you can maybe, like, you know, put some, one of us can volunteer to get all your quick recipes, and so people can use it, all your quick fixes, when you have a lot of people coming over. Thank you.
You can go to my website. There are a few quick recipes on it.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Go to my website. There are a few quick recipes on it.
Oh, great.
We'll send out, as a follow-up to the call, we'll send out a link to Ranganath's website, so that way you guys can learn a little bit more about him and get some of these recipes and stuff as well.
And there are recipes contributed by a number of people, and most of them tried to focus on being quick.
Fantastic. Thank you.
That's great. Okay, wonderful. That actually takes us to our full 90 minutes. I wanted to say this just a fantastic call. You know, Sandy, Ranganath, thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your journey and just really doing what you're doing. I mean, I know you guys don't think that it's anything special, that it's that big of a deal, but it's truly touching, because you think about, you know, even just some of us just listening on the call, the number of people that have come across your life, or, you know, whether it's the wizard there in your living room, it's obviously impacted a lot of people. And so it's inspiring to many of us, and hopefully we can kind of open up our homes, open up our hearts in that generosity. And so I wanted to thank you, and wanted to thank the group of individuals that are out there, especially Nasheen and Audrey, for moderating the call. And as we do every week to close out, wanted to do a minute of silence and gratitude for this wonderful share, and for this 90 minutes where everyone has come to co-create such a beautiful space. So, a minute of silence, please. Thank you. I am. I'm going to take the mute mode off, and on the count of three, it would be wonderful if we can all sort of share our gratitude with Sandy and Ranganath as well, with a big thank you from all of you on the call. So, just going to take it off mute, and on the count of three, one, two, and three.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ranganath.
You, Sandy and Ranganath.
Thank you all, and again, please tune in next week, and we will have yet another set of wonderful guests. And again, Sandy and Ranganath, thank you so much for your time. Good
Bye-bye.
Afternoon or good evening, all of you.
Bye.